Dentistry is changing. Technology, education, and resources are closer to our fingertips now more than ever. Are you ready to learn what millennial dentists are doing to exceed patient expectations, enjoy dentistry more, and take more vacations? Or how this generation can join up with the previous ones to make for an unstoppable dental team? Well, wait no longer. Here is your host of The Millennial Dentist, Dr. Sully Sullivan.
All right, we're here on location in Memphis, Tennessee.
Back home at dental school.
Yeah, it was kind of weird walking in here. It's been a while. How'd you feel, Sully?
Honestly, to me, it's been really weird because this is my first time back on campus. And you obviously coming back through, I imagine residency is a lot more fun and less stressful than dental school. Yeah. So like, it's definitely been nostalgic, but a little like I walk into certain rooms or like floors and I'm like, all right, is anybody watching me? And can we get out of here? Like, I don't want to go see those people. Like earlier, oh my gosh, this is so funny. So Dr. Higdon failed me on my class 3 comp. So like I saw her upstairs and I was like, oh, let's just turn the other way. I was like, I totally shouldn't have failed that. So anyways, it's a little weird.
Yeah. So we're back here in Memphis and we get the pleasure of Dr. Marva Wells has agreed to talk to us today.
Here I'm excited about this.
UT Pediatric Dentistry Department down here. So Dr. Wells, thank you for joining us. So just tell us a little about yourself.
Yeah. Tell us just give us your story. Let's start there.
Okay. I'm originally from Georgia and I've always been a nerd. And so I actually went into college thinking I wanted to do genetics, got into a lab and was like, oh no, this is not what I want to do. Never really had a call for medicine. And so I just started sort of shadowing people and come from a really small town. My hometown dentist was like,
where in Georgia are you from?
A place called Eastman, Georgia. It's an hour south of Macon. It is the home of Stuckey's Candy, which was the pecan log roll.
Oh, yeah. Stuckey's.
Yeah. Yeah. So hometown dentist, shadowed him, and he was like, I always babysat, worked for summer camps, that kind of thing. He was like, you need to go see this pediatric dentist in a nearby town. So I sort of went thinking, oh, I want to work with kids. I like pediatric dentistry. So I sort of then shifted gears in college and decided I wanted to go to dental school. And I sort of went in dental school thinking about pediatrics. Really liked almost everything. Liked the technical skills of dentistry. But decided, yes, I wanted to do pediatric dentistry.
So you kind of knew from the get-go going into school that was what you wanted to do.
That I thought that I was going to be open to everything, but I sort of was bent that way to begin with.
Sure, sure.
And then went to Ohio State for my pediatric dental training and loved it. I was sort of there at a perfect storm for faculty, had wonderful mentors, just felt like I really got this fabulous education. And the current chair of pediatric dentistry at Louisiana State University was a year ahead of me in residency. And so Janice Townsend went right into academics after residency. And I remember thinking, she is bananas. Like, who wants to do that? So, I mean, why would you want to do that?
Yeah.
So I went into private practice, met my husband. He did endo at Ohio State. And so I practiced while he was doing endo.
Did you show me in while you were there?
Okay, yes, nice. We met at Ohio State. And
special, just fall in love.
Yes. And so then when he finished, I had been in private practice for a little over 2 years and just was like, I really miss school. I miss the collaboration. I missed, you know, bouncing ideas off, off of people. And so we decided we were going to be moving anyway. And so if I wanted to try being faculty, that now was the time. And interviewed a couple places. Tennessee felt like a good fit. And so I've been here ever since. One of the things that you sort of don't think about in pediatric dentistry, depending on who you practice with and that kind of thing, is for your own family, when your children are out for Labor Day and Martin Luther King the week after Christmas, you're in the office. Mm-hmm. And summer's one of your busiest times instead of your slowest times. And so even though I really liked practice, academics, that's nice because
makes
I get those
sense.
Holidays with my children.
Yeah.
And also, if one of my kids are sick and I need to, Well, in fact, this since January, one has broken an arm and one has been in the emergency room for stitches. And so when the school calls and says, you need to come get your child, you know, I'm not worried about canceling patients. And I have, you know, I have people who can sort of take over, go get out of here.
You have a little more flexibility.
Yes, basically. I have some flexibility for sure. Plus the administration here has been very progressive in terms of females and trying to, you know, be flexible and you know, look at how can we do maybe part-time work or how can we help get people in academics who, you know, don't necessarily want to sign up for 5 days a week from, you know, 8 to 5. So
what I imagine too, like to be able to attract, you know, really good dentists, and you kind of have to be more flexible and kind of help to do that to where the faculty you have is a really good faculty versus just like trying to get retired people, you know, or people who are out of dentistry, right? Like that, I think that's a huge advantage for the school to have someone like you who can then, you know, you've done private practice. It's not that long, but at the same time, you're staying on top of it and you get to have family.
Yes. That's really nice. And absolutely. I mean, you know, as dentistry is changing and the way we practice dentistry, I think the way we teach dentistry is changing and will have to change to meet.
Talk about
needs.
That, because I think that's really interesting. Yeah, as definitely. Far as where, how's that working? Because I'm sure you have a lot of people who are against the change or for the change. And is that hard? Because like, especially coming from private practice, did you feel like you were going backwards in time in how you taught things? Or is it, here, talk about that. I think that's really interesting.
I definitely think that it is hard to be contemporary sometimes in academic education. Sometimes if you are classically trained in one method, it's hard to adopt new methods. And so though as dentistry as a whole is moving towards making clinical decisions based on science and using evidence and that kind of thing, it's a little bit easier to begin to implement those changes. But yes, coming, you have to be patient, you know, and take baby steps in the right direction. And eventually you will get there. But part of it is that part of it is administration recognizing the need for innovation, the need for contemporary thoughts and pushing that envelope, but without going so far that you use a new material that's not really investigated. That's a tough balance, like implementing new things, but yet having enough science behind them to say they're worthy of teaching in dental school. And I think it depends, you know, talking to some of the other friends and academics, it really is an institution by institution, how contemporary that administration is in terms of, and the constraints on that institution in terms of like the flexibility they might or might not allow. Or, yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is just personal, I don't know. Does the ADA or is there a governing body that like helps influence or all dental schools kind of independent as far as their decision making and how they teach and that sort of thing? Like, is there any sort of like...
Well, they all have CODA accreditation. So yeah, there are some standards that they have to teach by, but you know, they do have to show that they're teaching evidence-based dentistry, but no one has to come in, you know, no one has to say like, these are the rules and, you know,
right.
This is how you have to do everything. I mean, other than showing that you're meeting accreditation standards.
And I'll definitely say, like, coming into this program, Dr. Wells is my director down here. So she influenced all my training basically here.
That's kind of fun to be back at the old conference room here.
Yeah, it's great. I learned a lot of good stuff in here. And so we also passed some time writing on that whiteboard doing math problems with Jason. So that was fun. But just tell us a little bit about you're published in a lot of all your research. So you know how many articles you have published now? Like over 20?
I'm not sure. Really.
That's pretty cool.
Hey, I know she wrote one with me and she really helped me out.
Are you published?
I'm published.
I didn't know you're published.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Dr. Wells guided me the whole way. So.
And it was your idea. It was your work.
Yeah.
What are you published in?
It's on the, you put me on the spot. the clinical success and the parental satisfaction with anterior zirconia crowns. So. Wow. Basically, these new like easy pedo crowns, zirconia. We did a retrospective study So we did a on the recalls of patients that had these crowns placed, just kind of see how they looked, the clinical evaluation of it, and then had a parents fill out a survey, and just to kind of see if parents like it, the kids like it, basically. So it was really good. You have to check it out.
Yeah. So do you after being in, or you would
well, and also you've written a chapter in a textbook that's like one of the pediatric dentistry textbooks go-tos. So
it's really slick.
And you're working on a new chapter.
I've actually been asked by Dr. McTeague to take his place as editor, as one of the editors. So there are four of us that will be new editors of the 2018 edition.
That's awesome.
What's this book called?
Pediatric Dentistry, Infancy to Adolescence.
Oh, wow.
The sixth edition.
That's pretty crazy.
Isn't that cool?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So how did you get into like, and I guess we probably have a lot of listeners that want to go into academia or research or this sort of thing. Do you feel like there are things or steps that you did in dental school or after dental school that kind of led you to this? Or this is just, you just know kind of your, like you said, your nerdiness or passion for that is kind of what ran to this?
Well, you know, a lot of people, part of...
Like, how do you start to get published? Like that's something probably people are like, I want to be published.
Well, I was going to say, so on one hand, clinical teaching and didactic and giving lectures and that kind of thing is one interest area for individuals. And you sort of have to be pretty decent at that to go into academics. But then most people find research daunting, right? Like, it doesn't sound impressive, or it can sound impressive once you've published it, but like doing it can sound very tedious and that kind of thing. So
it scared me to death when I knew I had to do a research project. I mean, I was scared to death, but Dr. Wells really helped me out.
He pulled you right through.
Yeah.
I was very lucky because in residency, I had a research project that I hated and that I thought, as I tell all my residents, everybody will feel like they got the short end of the stick on research, that everybody, you know, worked harder, whatever, yeah. You know, and,
whose name's first and
yeah, then somebody else, yeah, yeah. And it was kind of miserable. I had a really good mentor, but it was like, we were trying to get IRB approval and we just never get it. And then, but it sort of all laid the groundwork for being able to come in and feel like I was familiar with that process a little bit. What I have not done is, ideally what you're supposed to do is carve out this area of research. You know, like you want to be, when they talk about dental materials, you want to be the materials
person.
You're
the niche person.
Yes, yeah. You're the niche person. Or they talk about pulp or whatever, pain management, whatever. And I really have not done that. I've sort of been like, this is interesting. Let's do a little of this.
I'm the jack of all trades research niche.
Yes, that is me. Jack of all trades. Yes. So,
awesome,
I've done, you know, done everything from, we do a lot of sedations in this program. And so, you know, a retrospective view of our sedations, or with Daniel, looking at the new zirconia crowns. There are some great material science researchers here that have been gracious enough to, take some of my ideas and collaborate with me. And so I've done materials research. We've done some parental surveys looking at you guys talking, you know, sort of new things like looking at a mobile dentistry app and looking at, you know, like do people like that better than a poster, better than a handout, something on paper that you can give them, where they'd rather have something on their phone, and sort of, you know, just really kind of all over the place, but anything that I was like, that's interesting. Let's do that.
Yeah. That's nice. That's awesome. Yeah.
So I feel like research doesn't seem so daunting because I always think the questions that we're trying to answer are interesting.
Right. Well, that makes sense. Well, if it's boring, then you're not gonna, then it's not fun, but yeah.
And of our year, there were six people in my class, and I think all six of us got our research published.
I believe so.
That's pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm. So we all the way from ADA, the JOTA journal, to AAPD. I mean, we're in all dental traumatology.
You know, I didn't appreciate that as much in dental school. I appreciate a lot more now. I think now that I'm, you know, like materials. Like I was definitely the one that was like, well, I don't care about that. I don't want to do that. But then now that I'm in private practice, I find those articles so much more interesting, I think, just because it affects my day-to-day usage.
How do you choose a product?
Exactly.
Well, you've got to understand it, right?
Because you have all these reps that come in there and then they're like, oh, well, our research, our bonding is the best bonding. And, you know, they hand their flyer done by their research people. And
Exactly.
It's like, well, what the heck am I supposed to do here? And so trying to look at some of these, like, you know, third party, really, you know, well-known journals and stuff has really helped me out a lot. Just from a standpoint of trying to kind of have good evidence-based reasons for why I'm choosing the materials I'm choosing. Talk about, since you've been teaching, you really have only been teaching millennials. Talk about that a little bit, because it's got to be, what are things that drive you crazy? What do you see about our generation that we're kind of missing the boat on that we could do better on? Or I know that's kind of putting you on the spot, but I do think it's interesting to hear your perspective on kind of the state of that. Make sense?
Mm-hmm. Well, we talk a lot, you know, about how can we adapt to different learning styles and that kind of thing.
Because that has to be kind of a conversation, I imagine, with faculty that's going around, is like, you know, and especially that's like the buzzword now. I feel like the millennials, that's being thrown around all the time. And so surely that has to, you know, like just from a grand overview of like, man, how do we deal with some of the, you know, because you don't have, and the distractions and the, you know, that it's just kind of an interesting time, I guess.
Well, so one of the things I love about you guys is because you could be on, you know, my residents can be anywhere on any type rotation or in the OR one day or wherever. I love that you're responsive to email.
Sure.
Because I communicate a lot through email.
And if we're not responsive, then you know we're ignoring you.
Right.
We get all our
phones. So, yes. And so, responsive to email and to text. So I would say it's a little harder to do classical sort of like, here's the PowerPoint and, you know, and not try and have them engaged. That's one of the nice things about residency is it's a small seminar type, type environment. So you can interrupt somebody and ask a question and, you know, and I don't have a lot of, unlike when I, you know, go to a pre-doc lecture and, you know, 100 people are sitting in there and everybody's got their laptops up.
Yeah,
and like, you don't know. And I am okay with, you know, I'm presenting the information. If you're somebody who learns it sitting here, great. You know, if you'd rather see this presentation or read your notes at Starbucks, I am not all that concerned about that. And I think, you know, that is going to take a long time before some other people are like, yeah, we can adopt that. We don't have to have this attendance policy. At the same time, I also expect a lot of you.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. Well, so, I think that's totally fair. I think that's great that, because that was my, what I guess annoyed me as a student was like, look, if hold me accountable, let me do that. But if I want to learn a different way, then it's ultimately my responsibility to go where I want to go with it. Right. I think that's a very millennial way of thinking. Like, you know, like it's my money. I want to do what I want to do, you know, and that probably drives people crazy just because it's different than how the older generation was taught and what they expected and sitting there in shirt and ties and, you know, taking notes on pen and paper.
Yes. Yes. So, I mean, I'll say with residents, I really don't have a lot of complaints in terms of, by the time you've made it to residency, you've sort of proved yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like, and the other thing
you
is
you want to be there. Cause like you're really,
that's exactly, you're interested in the material. You want to be there. You know, usually the stuff that, we end up, you know, having meetings about is ticky tack stuff. That's not, you know, not like major deficits, you know, or deficiencies of the student or the resident at that point for residency. So I've been really lucky in our classes, really motivated individuals. Probably the biggest prodding is in their research.
Sure. Okay. Talk about being a mom and a dentist and a teacher and kind of how, I mean, like, that's a lot on your, I can't imagine doing all that. I mean, that's gotta be a lot on your, how do you balance that?
We used to call her Super Martha. And like, Martha.
Do her face or behind her back? Is this the first time she's hearing this?
You've heard this.
Larkin would be like, I have a bobblehead of you, you know, like.
Because the fact, I mean, she's doing all this stuff.
It's very impressive because, there's a lot of other students having kids in school. I'm like, I can't imagine. I was like, I'll try to do all I get to survive.
Yeah. So I have three. I have a 7-year-old, a 4-year-old, and a 6-month-old.
Wow.
And we are done.
That's funny.
So it is, it's a lot. And I'll be honest, like I didn't have a very supportive husband who's like a rock star dad. And, you know, I mean, it wouldn't be possible. He's an ended honest. And so he's very contemporary in his thinking. He doesn't work 5 days a week all day. He works basically part-time too. So we can pick up our kids in the afternoon by the time we split part-time stuff. You know, we were talking earlier off record about one of the research projects I did was the gender shift in pediatric dentistry. And one of the things that was interesting, because they've shown this in medicine too, is that working part-time doesn't always come with just being female. A lot of times it's a dual income family.
Yeah.
And so you will see men work part-time as well if you have a dual income family and both people providing. So I sort of think that's an interesting sort of twist on it. And then a lot, again, like this has been a really great institution for me in terms of being very, like lots of support research-wise and lots of support from the administration. So that's also made it easy. It would probably be much harder to be on an island and be able to do all this stuff.
Does your husband do research too? Does he have the same?
No, he loves to say though, he was like Daniel, he was published in residency. So he loves to say he was published before I was. <That's pretty good. laughs> He's like, you may have way more than me, but I was the first one in our family published.
He was the trailblazer of the research department.
Exactly.
That's pretty funny.
He has a master's too.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. You give him a hard time about that.
Yes. So we have what we call a project master's here, meaning you get, you know, we try to submit yours for an article to be published. They had like the thesis. So his is bound in this like really nice, like gold foil book, you know, that like, you know, I have on a bookshelf in our living room. And he's like, please put that away. I was like, no, this was hard work.
That's awesome. How would you, if you had to give advice to women who are in dental school about like when, you know, when's a good time to do that or how to do, is there a time? Or I mean, I don't even know. I'm a guy. I'm just, you know, wondering, is there, you know, do you think that?
Absolutely. Yeah. There is never a good time and you never have enough money. So just do it.
That's probably good for me to hear personally. Cause my wife and I are, it's like, I'm too much of a planner. So like, I want to be like financially stable and everything. And it's just like,
it will never be a good time and you will never have enough money and you will make it work. I mean,
You have three kids and you teach and all that stuff. And that's so impressive.
Yeah. And my first one I had when I was in practice, and I mean, you just, you find a way to make it work and do what you've got to do. And it does, is sort of interesting. In that gender shift article, one of the things we asked is sort of how parenthood changes the way, specifically for us, like the way we treat children. And everybody said that it has an influence. And I think that's true. It will absolutely have an influence on how you practice, how you treat people, and then how you value your time, while you think it's important now, when you become a parent, like it is your most valuable commodity, and how you spend it is what will probably matter the most to you.
Well, it probably seems like a flash that you had your 7-year-old and now you're like, what the heck? I have a 7-year-old? Yeah. You don't feel any old. I can imagine. You don't feel any older.
Yes. I'm going to be so sad when people don't think, like when people stop mistaking me as a student. Yeah. They've already stopped mistaking me as a student. But they think I'm now still a resident, right? I still look like a resident.
We would sit in residency. We'd be sitting here. We'd be like, man, Dr. Wells, we're about the same age as Dr. Wells. I mean, we're not far apart in age. And I was like, she's done so much of her life already. Like done all these articles, director of a pediatric program. Like, it's just kind of like, we're just like, wow, she's just amazing. This is just great.
Impressive.
Yeah.
What is the, what's the future for Dr. Wells looks like?
I don't know. I love my job. I love what I do. So one of the things that I'll tell residents is, and I think when people think about going into academics and teaching anything clinically, this is sort of how you have to do it. It is my way of helping children. So I may not be sitting there chairside actually doing that restoration,
100%, yeah.
But teaching, if I can impart just a little bit of knowledge to Daniel, then really difficult task, but we did it. We made it happen.
Just enough.
If I could just impart just a little bit of knowledge, then I have exponentially helped every child that he touches.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, that's sort of my mission and, you know, why I do this job or whatever. I mean, I love working with the residents, meet fantastic people, get to know them, you know, get to see what's happening in their life. But it's also the way that I personally feel like I'm helping children. And so.
That's awesome. Cause you're able to, by training all these people, cause I mean, if you're just out practicing private practice, I mean, you can make an influence just by yourself, but I mean, you're helping like train a generation of specialists out there that are able to impact multiple people.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I think that's really cool. So what do you think about the future of dentistry? Like, where do you think we're going in that aspect?
We definitely have a paradigm shift. We're moving to the medical model of management. In other words, exactly what we've seen in terms of heart disease and diabetics, like, how do we prevent dental decay? And even though we have told people to brush and floss for hundreds of years, it feels like now, and everybody knows, you know, brush, floss, use a fluoridated toothpaste. So we know now, like, it's not just about education. Everybody knows that. So what is the other piece in terms of that societal or personal psychology? How do you get them to actually do what you want them to do?
Well, it's choices, right? Like, people would rather have sweet tea and Coke and drink that all day long than choosing an alternative that wouldn't be so bad on your teeth or whatnot, you know? Probably the same reason we struggle with obesity in America.
Yes. And so the same things that we're looking at, how do you attack those from, you know, a societal or, you know, kind of, because yes, everybody knows that fried food is not great for you, and yet we still do it. So dentistry will continue to move down that path too, of like, what are the best ways? And I think that's where some of your, you know, sociologic research will come from, in terms of what can we do to
not just treat symptoms, basically.
Exactly. What, you know, we all, I would say, experts in cariology all agree.
Wow. I have to Google that. Yeah.
All agree.
I've heard caries in 2 years.
That restorative treatment is a supplement to the prevention plan, that we are not, you know, we're never going to like drill and fill our way out of the ocean of disease. And so until we look at restorative as a part of the total treatment plan for the patient, and that prevention is also part of that treatment plan. And so I think, you know, we are sort of just starting down that road. The other thing is continuing to advance in technology. You know, dentistry is such a small market compared to medicine. But yet we have tons of, and as pediatric dentists, we don't even get to see it as much as general dentists, you know, in terms of like, you know, CAD cam and digital.
Or Combeam. I'm sure your husband's seen it. It's just crazy. Yeah.
And digital impressions and that kind of thing that I think we'll continue to see just, you know, a explosion in utilizing those technologies.
So that just totally triggered a thought. Talk about laser dentistry in kids. Are you doing any of the research, doing anything? Is that seems to be like kind of from what I hear a lot of trying to be anesthetic free, seems to be a kind of a wave of the future.
Potentially. So I think it's one of those things like hasn't been integrated into everybody's everyday practice, still very expensive technology, huge learning curve on that. This school does have lasers. It's no one's special area in pediatric dentistry right now. But
that's kind of surprising to me, because I feel like that's a huge, I mean, if you could go handpiece free, you know, or anesthetic free, that there's a lot of potential in that.
Yeah.
I'm not a pediatric dentist. So
yeah, I know Ryan, who I work with, he's used laser and does some fillings with it here and there, but they usually have to be really small. He said it takes a long time. And I mean, as
there's
the
a lot of talk about
better,
that Hemin from, you know, cause there's more and more companies coming out with lasers, and that's a big advertisement, right?
Yes,
is that we're going to do.
Yes. And right now
it's
only end cutting. It's not an efficient cutter. It doesn't totally eliminate the need for anesthetic, but again, is that a learning curve? Is that that? I mean, is that technology, you know?
What's holding it back?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think cost is holding it back. And I'm not the expert on this, so I can't, it's like anything else. There are great uses for it. And then there are some times where I bought it, so I need to make sure I use it. Sure. kind of technology as well. So I think absolutely like soft tissue lasers.
Yeah, that's definitely
have a niche. And, you know, hard tissue lasers potentially could definitely impact the future. They have to be more economical so that they become mainstream. Which is,
well, and I think efficient too, like you said. I don't think it's in a busy practice. It has to be. You can't take 30 minutes to imagine. You don't have that much time on a 4-year old.
Oh yeah, you have a little small window there. Once they're done, I mean,
yeah,
you're done for the day.
Yeah. Well, and you know, you asked again where to do it. You know, sort of looking at the future of dentistry. The other thing that I think that you see is absolutely the. Gender shift. So I'm pretty sure that we've already tilted that mark in dental education and just dentists, that there are slightly more females going to dental school than males if you look at national numbers. And that's certainly true in pediatric dentistry. Pediatric dentistry is modeling pediatric medicine, which has about 70% of new residents being female. And that's about the trend that pediatric dentistry is seeing as well. So there's some interesting things that come out of that in terms of what we've already talked about, practice ownership, you know, practice hours, how they treat patients. Do they manage patients differently than their male counterparts? And
we probably shift more to group practice type stuff too, because you're going to have more
urban location. Yeah. And potentially it does appear that the research also shows they're more likely to take community dentistry roles and public health roles and academic roles and that kind of thing as well. So that'll be interesting sort of to see the as that continues and you have graying of the faculty, what happens in academics, what happens in practice, that'll be interesting.
And I look forward to see too, because a lot of it comes back, unfortunately, to money. And where does the money go? Where does the money flow? And that's, and how does, you know, like you said, as that moves on, what money is invested into academia and how we do that? And then in the same route, you even like research and whatnot, where, you know, it's kind of counterintuitive for a lot of things to be, for money to be pushed into areas, I guess, because if it doesn't benefit the dentist, then why are they going to do it, right? So it's like, it needs to be, I think that's kind of interesting to see and whatnot.
Well, that was pretty awesome.
This has been great.
Yeah. Thanks for sitting down with us. And
yeah. Thank you guys for the invite.
Yeah. I really appreciate it. This has been really fun, and this has been educational.
Very good. Well, I just want to remind everybody out there, we're down here live from Memphis.
Tell me this, where can people find your stuff? Like your info and whatnot. Give us your info. You have an email people to contact you. Is that okay? Can people give you your email?
Sure. I don't know what I'm opening myself up to.
It's good. People have questions, but hey, that girl, that lady was really nice. Let's see
more. Yes. So I'm Martha Wells, and I'm the program director at the University of Tennessee. My email is mwells18@uthsc.edu.
See, they can Google that anyway. So right. You know what that is? You're just helping them. You're saving them a step. That's all they're doing.
And so you can find me on the UT webpage. If you PubMed search me, back to it, then you can find all my articles and all the different journals that almost all of them have been resident projects. And so
that's awesome.
All of them get some credit in terms of had some really awesome residents come through.
So, well, sweet. Thank you so much again.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you guys.
Hey, thank you. We remember to
work smarter,
not harder anymore. Right. Okay.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.